timing on that one. I wonder if I was getting onto that particular bus, and you're the driver, so to speak, Wes, where was that bus going? N2XJN, K2RIW, the Deadman.
My magnetic experiment when you get a chin stick.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Let me give Wes a little bit of time there first. Go ahead, Wes.
N2XJN. I'm going to give priority to the John, as I would love to be discussing the subject today. I have in my house, sitting next to me, a scientist from Japan who specially came to my house for the first time, and he's sitting in my house right now. And we were listening to the part of the technet. So, and we came to the certain conclusion in the area of so-called free energy, or say, untapped energy right now. We believe that after a few hours of the third time being here, we finally understand something. Unfortunately, it looks like, if we are not mistaken, it is a sign to the isotopic reaction. Let me just... It means that the original pattern that was presented in here, that we discussed about the guy that had a very, very tiny cube made out of the quartz glass with the certain components in it, this thing was imaged to have a 2 to 20 seconds activation that it could give energy out for the next hour and whatsoever. We were trying to find out how TK was able to create his device, and unfortunately, it looks like most of the stuff that he was presenting to us, although it worked, was just cover up to the reaction. We went to the Lithuania experiment. We're trying to find out the positive part of how kind of using the milliwatts of power could create enormous amount of power out. And it looks like we're dealing with a very much similar mechanism, which is excitation with the short impulse, and then using the energy for the period of time. One of the shows that was given to me by TK was using something that I have called high voltage two-pitch generating system, which was just a blast taken out of the hot water heater that was programmed to give the burst of, let's say, 20 impulses of 5,000 volts, and it stopped. Then if the test wire that was attached to the flame sensor didn't see the flame, send the information that it was, hey, you gotta give another 20 impulses. So it didn't deal really with any resonance, it looks like, as we were dealing with something that works as excitation for that. It seems to work. So in case of Lithuania experiment, it looks like all of the side effects was because the particular crystal, and this guy is the scientist from the material. That means the material scientist. And he's every day dealing with that, like the Glenn is dealing with crystals, he's dealing with the material. The Russian TV yolk, it has the crystalline or the components that are similar from those that were assigned to the experiment made by Army, the Fort Mammoth, where at a certain frequency, the manganium was replacing iron. What he thinks, and I think right now, what is happening is, when you're creating the isotope, you're taking the energy from the reaction. But we have a question, and I have a question for you, not discussing what I sent to you. If they state that... They state in the Fort Mammoth experiment that at a frequency of 300 megahertz, which is exactly the frequency of the experiment from the 60s that was the pattern was issued for it with that isotopic reaction. If that frequency the Mangani was replacing Iron, would you rather believe that the dead atom disappeared and it was changed partially to the energy, just the pure energy like we have, the energy versus mass relation, or you just think that there was, we were dealing with the monomanganium atoms and the rest of the atoms of the iron, which would then tell about the Middle Age alchemy when you can create the gold or any other materials, which I don't believe is happening. If let's say theoretically, we have a, we're talking about the transmutation, do you rather think that the mass overall of the structure is less and part of it is changed to the energy and to
it?
We hear you, Matt. Wes, when it comes to a number of these experiments where a small amount of excitation, sometimes from a 9-volt battery, sometimes from a couple of seconds worth, milliwatts of input from a 9-volt battery going into a machine, a process, a box, and then the output power from the box will power 500 watts of incandescent bulbs for the next hour, where a small amount of energy input excitation gives you a large amount of energy output for a long period of time. Without having quantitative data, it's a little bit hard to accept those demonstrations. I know TK has done a number of those demonstrations. He implies that he has made a discovery, he has a process, he has plans. I presume he sells hardware. I assume he sells plans. And so at first, it seems to border on what sounds like perpetual motion, or certainly excess energy. But it seems to border on what looks like perpetual motion, a lot more output than input. And when it comes to spontaneous radioactivity of certain materials, yes, you can get a lot of energy output. That plutonium power supply that's on the surface of Mars right now, powering the Mars Science Laboratory. Let me drop it. That's a beautiful example of that particular radioactive material doing its spontaneous radiation, is giving off tremendous amounts of energy for years at a time, that particular material. And yet, a kind of transmutation is taking place there. As that material spontaneously radiates, plutonium is being converted to some other substance. But for you or I to take a non-spontaneously radioactive material and transmute it to something else is such an extremely difficult process. I don't think we can easily do it within the kinds of resources that you and I can put into a household laboratory, so to speak. But let me ask you this question. For a number of years now, TK has been demonstrating these very exciting machines. Milliwatts of input of excitation and kilowatts of output for hours at a time. He has demonstrated a number of those on YouTube. Has anyone else duplicated that piece of hardware other than TK? How many people have done that other than TK? Is it some kind of a secret that he has that he's holding close to his chest? Has anyone else done it? I mean, if four other laboratories duplicated the TK material, TK hardware, the TK object, and got similar results, that's exciting. But if he's the only guy that has ever done it, now you and I have to worry, is it real? How many other people have built that machine to your knowledge, Jeff, Wes? N2XJN, T2RIW, and the TechNet?
K2YO for weather traffic.
Yeah, that should take priority, so go ahead, Bernie.
Dick picked up Matt. He's got some breaking information from the South Shore. K2YO.
You've got it, Matt. KC2YDT, K2RIW, and the TechNet.
Okay, thanks again. I just wanted to let everyone know, this reading book on Merrick Road by Southgate Stop and Center, over by the Massapequa River. I just went into a convoy in National Guard troops. There's already flooding coming from the Massapequa River. They wouldn't be surprised if they are going to be going door to door by morning asking people to get out of their house. So be prepared.
Back to your knowledge, is that area being forcefully evacuated? Have more than a strong suggestion for evacuation taken place? Back to you, Matt.
I think usually when they send in the National Guard with machine guns and everything to go door to door, yes, it's going to be a forceful evacuation.
Interesting. Okay. And as Greg and other people have told us earlier, and Barry, this particular high tide is a minor one. The one that we're going to get tomorrow morning is going to be a major high tide with a lot more surge of water and a lot more high tide. So I guess the National Guard is worried about those people being very difficult to rescue tomorrow if they don't get away from those low water areas. I guess they're, what's it called, the grade A areas as far as water intrusion is concerned. I see if Bernie's got some more words on this. K2 Yankee Oscar.
K2LIW, Bernie. Negative. I just was speaking with Matt, and he was telling me that, and it seems appropriate to get out over the air, so I was being a little more forceful than breaking in. Did you well?
I'm glad you did that, because I was misunderstanding. Matt, right now, the Massapequa area, a certain portion of it is being evacuated. Do you have any reason to believe that other areas in Nassau and Suffolk County are about to be evacuated, if you happen to know? KC2YDT, quite often you say KC2YDT, we don't hear the YDT. KC2YDT, please tell us what else you know, Matt, K2LIW.
KC2YDT, if you look on the town of Islip website, they have a whole list of house numbers and all that stuff, you know, which they will be doing mandatory evacuation starting tomorrow morning. I can tell you just by driving home, I passed four houses that already had their sump pumps dumping out water from the basement. And like you just said, this is a minor flood. They're really concerned about tomorrow morning.
Okay, when it comes to emergency ham radio frequencies, and you can correct me on this one, Bernie, the ARRI's emergency frequencies, the one for Suffolk County, I think, is 146.805, 146.805, 136.5 PL. I believe the other ARRI's emergency frequency on the 440 band is 443.525 with a PL of 141. Have I got that correct, Bernie? KT Yankee Oscar, K2LIW.
The message for Bernie also.
Bernie first, go ahead, Bernie.
Yes, I believe those to be correct. If anybody knows otherwise, please jump in right away. Also, just wanted to mention that Landmark's plans is to run an informal net on this frequency for the duration of the storm. We'll be having people on 24 hours a day. If anybody has any particular needs that need to get passed on, just want to talk about what's going on, et cetera. We're going to keep this frequency manned for the duration. We do not have any official function on this frequency, but it is commonly used as a backbone because we are the biggest and strongest receiver around. It will not be uncommon to have, for example, Aries or Racing personnel come up on our frequency using our transmitter because it may be stronger than others around. K2L.
W2BMP.
KC2YDT also.
Okay, BMT recognized, but John is first. KC2WGB, go ahead, John.
Okay, Dick. Recommendation, Bernie, make sure they don't turn the repeater off at midnight tonight. I don't know that many have already been done, but if you could take a check.
Affirmative. We both have scheduled the repeater to stay on all night and the beam pumps to stay on all night.
Excellent. I think I have the call letters wrong. W2BMT is what it sounded like. Baker, Mike, Tango. Am I correct, me, sir? T2RIW.
It's Whiskey 2, Bravo, Mike, Papa, and I just wanted to correct the PL on the Aries. It's 114.8, sir, on 443525.
Glad you did that. Okay. So 443.525, PL is 114.8, not the 141 that I said. Matt, I know you had a further comment. KC2YDT? KC2YDT? KC2RIW. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay, I just also wanted to let everyone know, if you're going to be in Suffolk County in the Babylon area, the Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club also operates Aries from their EOC in their town emergency operations center. So you can go on Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club and get all the information there. The other thing, go on to nassaucountyaries.net. And you can find an entire list of all the emergency frequencies that Nassau County area uses.
Okay, I guess from now on we should make sure that anyone who wants to interrupt because of this weather condition on this repeater, we should give them priority. You probably said it, but I missed it. The frequency for the Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club, is that the 146.64? Am I correct on that one, Matt? KC2YDT, KQRIW?
KC2YDT, it's 146.685.
Yeah, I should have remembered that. 146.685, and I believe that's 136.5PL. Okay, so Rymark, 146.85. Great South Bay, 146.685. The Aries frequency, 146.805. Those are all 136.5 PL. And the 440 machine, 443.525 PL 114.8. Anybody with any further questions, collections on this? Give me a call letters right now. K2LAW in the Tech Max.
Hey,
right, go ahead, Max.
Okay, the town of Babylon is one of the special counties throughout Suffolk County. They have their own UHF repeater directly through the emergency operations center. And that's 440.850 positive shift from 110.9 PL.
Okay, 440.850 PL 110.9. Alrighty, thank you for that information. And what else before we leave this subject? K2RIW? Okay, we'll make sure we give a little bit of a standby in case anyone has further information about this weather condition. So my first question, Wesley, is to your knowledge, have many other people duplicated the TK hardware and got similar results, or is he the only person for all of these years demonstrating that kind of result? Into XJM, K2RIW in the Tech Map.
XJM. The first guy who repeated TK was the young Russian guy, 19 years old boy, and that was in 2009 in March. 3 weeks later, he disappeared, and when the Russians who were having contact with him were trying to find him, they told us most likely he is not alive at the moment. Now, TK is from Georgia, but this Russian guy was from Moscow. And then there were a few guys that were expanded with it, and right now, about 3 weeks ago, we had another guy. This time, the guy is from Ukraine. And this guy showed the video that looks very much different, and presents the working device for the working similar way to TK. Let me jump. What this guy did was better is the first guy, the young guy, didn't really hide himself. This guy didn't really expose himself. He shows the video, he shows the schematic, he exposed all of the secrets of his content, and now others try to replicate it. So whether this is true or it's not true, it's working, not true, working, it's a little bit time that is needed for it to work. But when I talk to this gentleman that is sitting next to me, we came to the conclusion that maybe everything is a fake. The only one is not the fake is the fact of creation of the energy. There is no such thing as the over-reality or perpetual motion. We think that the isotopic reaction is very much alike. If you recall the conversation we have had about the guy who was in the 60s patenting the device that was using the isotopes, and the guy was a Harold Coleman, maybe Jacques. 1956, he was using the compound, which is cadmium, phosphorus, and cobalt. What definitely is that cobalt was used in the fluorides used in Russian TVs for the private transformers. So when we were doing the Lithuanian experiment, his suspicion is that since the atomic weight was 112 and 31 and 559 respectively, there was a chance of creating the compound that was reacting as the radioactive material, and that's what the frequency was for. But the only what was needed was the excitation, so the small energy burst. I have in here two generators. One generator is 31 kilowatts, and the other one is 27 kilowatts. Copper, C-O-B-R, copper, yeah. And when I look from the other side, that copper is being powered by the regular 110 volt cable from the regular outlet. So how come this thing is able to give you the power of 31 or 30 something kilowatts? Well, because it is a short signal in a very short period of time. So we think that the excitation of the material to become radioactive and create any kind of compound that then could create a mutation, transmutation, could happen because of the small amount of energy given just to trigger the energy into the transmutation energy.
Okay, that was quite a significant transmission, Wes. What I think I heard you say in the beginning is that you're somewhat becoming suspicious. You and your person in the house with you are becoming suspicious that some of these demonstrations might be fake, which is a brand new thing that we're hearing. Up till now, I know that you had a fair amount of faith in quite a few of those demonstrations.
I have 100% faith that demonstrations are not fake. What I think is fake, the way that he demonstrates the device, that means he's got the results and he doesn't explain how the results are, like a magician. We expect from the magician to fake. Things are not true. This guy is showing something, he shows the effect, and now we think, why is that happening? So we think he might all be doing a nuclear reaction. Use the radioactive materials that are just a compound. In that particular patent from 1956, I see cadmium, phosphorus, and cobalt being put inside
the small 1/4 inch diameter glass tube, long length of 4.5 centimeters. And this thing is able to give you full a few kilowatts of power. That's the patent. And because he is creating a radioactive reaction out of that, especially cobalt, that's how he is getting the power back. He also says that there is a need to recharge that for a few seconds in order to have 1 hour of work. That means he's triggering the reaction, whatever the chemical reaction is there, or the radioactive is there, isotopic reaction is there. When you think that 100% TK is giving the effect, but he might be using exactly the same kind of trick. But he's faking all of the Tesla stuff and everything else, and doing it.
Okay. I'm going to show you what I think is a problem from my point of view, and in the future weeks we'll try to iron out whether or not it really is a problem. If I take a substance that is naturally radioactive, like plutonium, and plutonium is spontaneously going through radiation output, you can't control that. You can't speed it up. You can't slow it down. It decides on each individual burst of energy that it as an isotope or as a nuclear material it gives off. And when I have a nuclear material and I decide that I want it to give off more nuclear radiation or less nuclear radiation, the resources that are required to change its rate of spontaneous decay are way beyond normal resources. You cannot do it with heating it up or cooling it down. You cannot do it with a chemical reaction. A chemical reaction involves the outer valence electrons around those atoms. That doesn't touch the nucleus. A nuclear reaction where you're converting mass to energy, something is changing in the nucleus. But you or I on the outside of a job, for you and I on the outside of the nucleus, of those atoms of that isotopic, of that isotope of material, for you and I to tell that nucleus, I want you to give me a burst of energy now, or I don't want you to give me a burst of energy now. To put it very loosely, from my point of view, a nuclear material that is spontaneously decaying, it has a mind of its own. It has a certain given half-life. It's going to decay at its rate. It's the rate that it has naturally built into it. And you and I on the outside trying to excite it in some way, chemically, thermally, radio-wise, or whatever. And we think we're digging into that nucleus and changing that nucleus and changing the rate at which that nucleus spontaneously breaks down and radiates. Until you use something like a particle accelerator, like the Large Hadron Collider, for instance, until you lose a machine like that, you and I cannot come near to touching that nucleus. It's not going to listen to you and you and me. It's going to say, the heck with you. I'm doing my thing. I don't care if you use chemical reaction, radio reaction, thermal reaction, whatever. It's going to ignore you. That's my belief. And so we've got to address that belief. I could be dead wrong. I'm not an expert in this area. But I know that a nuclear reaction is a very special thing, very difficult for mankind to control under any normal circumstances without using a heroic amount of machinery at relativistic velocities to do it. And you're not getting relativistic velocities out of the machinery that we're talking about here. You see my problem with this one now was N2XJM, K2LIW, and it's
repeater, timeout, cancel.
He's related to beta voltage batteries or beta radiation and
he says that the cobalt is potentially radioactive. So, so the dig, yeah, but,
well, what do you think?
Yeah, oh, okay, I'm going to read what I, okay, then, the when we spoke to dig, the cobalt was also used widely in the United States in the 60s, 70s, and he gave the application for it right before the statement. I understand that. Okay. But practically to trigger the isotopic reaction is not difficult at all, and there is not a requirement for the resources to be there. The excitation of something that is at stage or on edge to the point of trigger is not much to be done. The simple way to describe that is that you have something that is on the edge of the table. All you need is just a little push for that to drop. When it drops, the energy from that is triggering other action. So if you have the cobalt 112 and created 2211 from that, it's not that difficult. Or you might use already radioactive materials in it. When you create a compound, which in this patent was by the tube of corona has been emitted, and there was
how many layers did you have?
14 layers.
Okay, if you took your cube carbon.
Well, she said we had the 14 layers of the compound, which was cadmium, phosphorus, and cobalt, and again and again and again, and those. Borders between those react are the capacitor. But because there is no capacitor that it doesn't have the inductance in it, then we have had a resonance circuit, and this resonance circuit at the frequency of 300 MHz at that particle wavelength, or the length of the physical structure, was getting into the resonance. And because the energy stored, because you have to excite it, was the energy that was dissipated in the chemical reaction on it. That's what triggers the energy outgiving from the compound. If I could simply say these few words. Dendrika.
Let me fetch the back stick first, see if I have it.
You've got it, Glenn. But other than assembling a radioactive material, a large amount of it called critical mass, where now the individual spontaneous emissions are emitting particles, and because you've got such a large critical mass of material around, that now there is a high probability of one of those emitting particles and coming out there at near the speed of light, with high probability striking another nucleus and exciting a chain reaction, yes, there can create a kind of excitation by creating critical mass. But other than critical mass or a very high energy particle accelerator, for you and I to kill a piece of radioactive material, I want you to emit now, and I want you to increase the amount of emission now, because I'm doing something on the outside of those atoms by way of chemical or temperature, or any other kind of excitation. For me to tell that spontaneous nuclear reacting material, I want you to change the amount of reaction now. Wow, I think that is awfully difficult. But maybe you've got another point of view on this one, Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2LIW in the tech net.
Yeah, actually, I do, Dick. I might have mentioned this a couple of times before. This was one of my early suspicions of what was going on here when Leslie was first describing it about two years ago, is that if you take a core material, a ferrite, and you sprinkle it with a heavy-based, nuclear preloaded type of material, and you impregnate the ferrite with it, what it does is it actually excites the B field on your transformer quite a bit. It really makes your transformer on steroids. So if you excite your transformer impregnated with nuclear material and you start a cycle on it, let's say even at 100 kilohertz, you wind up with additional energy on the coil. Basically, what's happening there is that as the electromagnetic flux is resetting the core on each cycle, what it's doing is that nuclear energy is actually has a high-frequency component above light. And what actually happens is the harmonics of that, it's a very woofy process, but woofy or not, that coil wrapped around that impregnated nuclear material will actually add energy. So if you're doing rectification and having a filter on the other side, that extra energy is getting added. Now, depending on the ratio, but let it drop for a second. Depending on the ratio of how much impregnation of nuclear material, you can actually get quite a bit of output. The Russians, and the Russian military for years was building these little generator units like this, and they were, you know, basically carried around by the military. When the Soviet Union fell apart, these things became a serious hazard because what was happening was they got left behind all over the place, and of course they get opened up, they have nuclear material inside of them, it's quite a mess. As a matter of fact, a lot of the eastern part of Europe is kind of dumping yards with these things inside them. They're having a heck of a time with the UN trying to mop these things up and get them to safe areas without getting people sick. But I'm going to pass back to you, K2RAWKC2, if you like to.
Okay, let me ask you something specific on this one now, Glenn. Let's assume that I've got your B-field on steroids, as you called it, where this material is the ferrite of a transformer. And I put into the primary winding of that transformer volt amperes of, let's say, 100 watts. And so 100 watts is going into the primary. Ordinarily, I'm trying to get the 95 of those watts out of the secondary. And because I've got this exotic material, which you're saying is giving me extra excitation, how many watts can I get out of that secondary? What's the gain on this thing? So I put 100 watts in, and I get the 105 watts out? Is that what you're saying, Glenn? Give me some specifics if you happen to know. How many watts in to this fancy nuclear impregnated ferrite material on this transformer versus how many watts output? And can I do that for the next 40 years? I continuously get more 105 watts out, so I put 100 watts in. KC2QIQ, K2RIW.
Fully understand, Dick, I think they have about somewhere between 5 and 10 year lifespans on them. And the construction of them, they could get kilowatts out of them. Like they were an equivalent to like what you get out of a home generator, like, you know, 4 or 5 kW. And basically what these things were, they were like lead-cased tube structures where it was a tube amplifier built inside it, very, very similar to like an X-ray tube, except instead of having a plate that would offset, you know, X-rays, but it basically did the tube amplifier was working with the with an excited material and created amplification. So basically, you turn these things on, and they were basically surrounded in lead, encapsulated, and I think they were also oil filled. It was like a petroleum type of oil that they used for cooling on these things too. So they were pretty interesting devices, but as I said, a real horrible disaster in terms of you didn't want these going to the public, to the consumer market. These were strictly for, like, military use. That, similar to the way, you know, military would power a nuclear submarine and things like that. You know, these are, you know, covered by technicians who are familiar with this. They were working with hot materials and things, and they were to be handled in this very, very specific way.
You told me you're getting kilowatts of output, but you didn't say how many watts of input. And was the kilowatts of output occurring without any input? You said you can go on for years getting kilowatts of output. Where can I read about these things, Glenn? KCQQIQ, K2LIW?
I'm not sure where you exactly. I'm sure. I'm going to look on the internet. You could probably do it yourself, too. Do Google for nuclear generators. Virtually, I think there was some, I think they were using like 24-volt batteries to do, but it was control power, period. And I think the only purpose, you don't need a battery to get these things to put out output power. I think the only reason why they use the battery is because you had to shut these things off, too. That was part of the problem. because you needed a control circuit in there to shut the thing down as well as turn it on. So there was some interesting circuitry in there, and I believe if you just do Russian nuclear-powered generators, you'll come up with these things, and they're very, very interesting devices. It's pretty scary. I heard about these things about 15, 20 years ago, and I was like, oh, my God. It first came by me initially because during the falling apart of the Soviet Union, these things were winding up all over the place, and there were all kinds of questions out there, like, how do we detect them? How do we get nuclear detectors out there, like Geiger counters to locate them? Dig them up if they got buried. Basically, the big problem is how to dispose of them. That was the big issue there. But no, you don't need any power to get power out. They're basically power generators in themselves. From what I understand, the batteries were really just the control. K2RIW, K2QI.
The power we've got on the spacecraft, Curiosity right now is a nuclear generator, which by thermal technique, that's the plutonium. The heat is going to some pyrite within now.
More couplish.
Or has it heard? Good morning. The time is 12 a.m.
The thermal energy is going to thermocouples being converted into DC electrical power. And that's what's powering the Curiosity right now. This generator you're talking about is not thermal to electrical DC generation. You're describing something that gives off continuous AC voltage from a nuclear source. What you seem to be saying, no input required, and it continuously gives AC output. My first question is, at what frequency, how long, and why can't we keep using it for the next 10 years? I'll hear you on the input, Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2RIW.
Can you hear me, Dick? Just check KC2QIQ.
I'm hearing you beautifully, Glenn. Go right ahead.
Hertz generators. Basically, they were in an inverter, an AC inverter on the output side, in a sine wave inverter. The power was basically DC output instead of a boost converter driving the inverter. What this thing basically was like a transformer with a tube. It's something similar to an X-ray tube, basically with a control power. And this thing would basically just free-run oscillate, and it would always put out like a nice, I think about a 400-volt peak-to-peak square wave, and they had rectifiers inside there, and the tube was surrounded in lead, and along with the excitation core source that was also wrapped in lead, and the whole thing was also, it had some kind of like a cooling, like it was all surrounded in oil, and it was continuous power, and, I'm not sure what are the descriptions you want of it.
Welcome to W2. R C 2 N repeater controller 5.2846. The time is 12:04 a.m. The time is 12:04 a.m. Ready.
Okay. If I understand you correctly, this AC voltage being generated by this nuclear core transformer, it's being rectified into DC and that's powering things. What frequency is coming out of that AC core transformer?
RC2N repeater controller.
Amount of radioactive energy, but I guess as time went on, they started posing a threat where the lead was no longer protecting anymore. So I guess there was a saturation problem with the lead. So there was quite a bit of problems with these things. That's why they don't really do them like that anymore. Case tubes like you.
When you say it ran at low efficiency, if you're getting power output and you're not putting anything in, what's the definition of efficiency in that case? Maybe what you're saying is that it gave off a whole lot of heat and only a small percent of it was electrical energy. But if I'm putting nothing in and I'm getting something out, what's the definition of low efficiency? What do you mean by that, Glenn? KC2QIQ, KQRIW?
Well, as converters go, if you work the efficiency backwards, in other words, say you take your load power, look at your efficiency losses in your output filter, work your way back to the transformer, the rectifiers, and then the tube itself that's doing the switching, and the transformer. You count up all of those dissipations, and you compare them to the load power, and basically they're like 50% efficient. So in other words, you're losing like 50% of power in losses. Copper and silicon. Just about half the power was being dissipated inside this box before it would make it to the output.
Ready.
If I was getting 50% loss in the copper, couldn't I just make the windings on the transformer thick enough in wider gauge that loss disappears? In which case, what loss is left over? Over to you, Glenn.
Welcome to W2EL repeat.
Well, I think the tube itself is part of the problem. The tube was the most efficient in the world, and I think also the other problem was that the method of conversion is very lost. In other words, how basically what's happening is the transformer goes into a form of saturation at basically at high frequency, and it just so happens that because the way the coil is wound around the material, the copper itself, just in other words, the way that the energy is conducting from the core, in other words, it's like a how can I explain this? You're familiar with how the flyback stores energy in 1/2 Li². So in other words, if you close the switch and you store energy in a core and then you release it, you're only releasing energy in one quadrant. The way this particular device works is because the material is excited with energy to begin with, basically the energy is stored in both quadrants. So in other words, when you switch in one direction, you have energy stored that you're releasing to the secondary, and then there's, when you go and switch into the other quadrant, you've got energy that's already been stored, because the energy's already there in the material, so the material's never resetting to zero the way a normal ferrite transformer would, number one. Number two, that form of coupling is not coupling from primary to secondary in a standard fashion with a transformer where you only have standard conduction loads. The conversion from that material to the copper is a very, very lofty coupling. More and more efficient, but I'm not sure that...
You said that the tube was inefficient. I presume that by the word tube you mean vacuum tube. What was the vacuum?
I've never seen one like it before. I mean, I just saw the drawings of it, and it looked very, very similar to something like an X-ray tube. Except, you know, obviously it didn't have an exit port that, where... and then it would turn back on in the other direction and then, you know, basically get it to conduct. But what was interesting was the way it conducted in two cycles, in other words, it was a full-wave device, even though the tube only conducted in one direction. So how that... was in the core, so it conducted like a fly... One side was forced conduction from the tube, and the other side was conducting to make the full wave between the core and the secondary on the other diode. So,
an error has occurred.
Warning, the time is 12:18 a.m. This is the W2EL Amateur Radio Repeater System.